pleasure to introduce the second of tonight's speakers, who is Mickey.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, my name's Mickey, I'm an addict. Thanks, Chris, for asking me to speak. Thanks, Dave, for taking the meeting. Thanks, Tara, for your chair. Thanks, everyone, for being here. I got asked today would I do this chair, and part of me didn't want to do it, and I said yes, I'll do it. When I first got clean, I believed I was the message. I remember I'd done 6 chairs in a week, 6 days back to back. I'd done a chair. I really believed. I was talking to myself in the end. On the 7th day, I was just sharing to myself. And today, yes, something's changed. I don't really like to speak that much at meetings. And I remember once I spoke, I said to my sponsor, "You're not asked to speak." I said, "I don't really feel like speaking." He said, "Well, it's not about you now." With that, and so there was always someone here to speak when I got clean. Mm. You know, when I first come into these meetings and I didn't know how to get a day clean, there was people here ready to do that. And so things have changed. And I went to my first meeting, and this, you know, if you're new here, if you're new in this fellowship, you know, you're very welcome. You know, and it can change you, and just give it a chance. And you know, and we can do that by how we're doing it now. It's quite straightforward in a complicated way. So So I went to my first meeting. It was the Mother Fellowship meeting in about 1986 in Pentonville Prison. I went to a meeting after that. The second meeting that I went to was in about 1996, was in Pentonville Prison. I went to the next meeting I went to, was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, was in 2004, was in Brixton Prison. I didn't spend all that time in prison, but I was always on my way back. Yeah, I got arrested around here. The last time I got arrested, I took a bag in the Royal Opera House. And I'd walked through Covent Garden and I'd been recognised by some... I walked through this area and I got recognised by a police officer who knew me. And he just called through and then they was on me. They knew. You see me, you know, it was no way that I was going to not be in this area and not commit an offence. You know, here we go, he's ours tonight. It's like that. I went into the Royal Opera House. I've shared it here before a few times. There was a guy going in. He was in a wheelchair. I don't even know if he was going in. He certainly ended up. I went behind him. I just grabbed these handles of his chairs. I went through the security. I just left the guy in the middle of the Royal Opera House foyer and just walked up. And just left him there. You know? And then I went upstairs and I went into this lovely restaurant upstairs and then I took this lady's handbag and I come out the side door. I knew my way around sort of quite well by this point. And I come out the door, I hit them fire doors, come out the side street, walking away, counting the money with the girl who was with me. All of a sudden, the guys run past me with a rucksack. I've got him straight away. I can't believe it. I know I'm gone. I know I'm nicked. I start to run. I start to panic. I'm full of anxiety. I'm full of fear. I'm full of dread. I'm absolutely petrified about not using. Mm-hmm. Petrified. Mm-hmm. I used once. It lasted 25 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was petrified to not use. Anyway, so I'm running around. I'm running around like a 3-year-old in Covent Garden or around the back street. I'm like a kid in the playground. They're trying to catch me. It's like I'm playing E. I ain't going nowhere. It's like, I'm just dodging them and they're like a lunatic. And, you know, they come on me and I'm really resistant and they're on me and, they're all piling on me and I'm whatever I am. But they start hitting me with their asps. And as they start hitting me, I'm getting closer to the floor. I can't go on the floor. Do not go on the floor. Cannot let them get me on the floor. I'm not going nowhere, but there's no real sense in this. But and I got smaller and smaller and smaller, and all that was really left was my feet and my head, and you know the rest of my body was just I was just trying not to go on the ground. They put me on the ground. They put me face down on the ground, pushed my face into the floor, into the sort of the grit of the road, pushed me into it. It was wet. It was damp. You know, they sat on me, they were probably 30, 40, 50 stone of them just sat on top of me with their knees in me. And I just couldn't believe it. I just could not believe this is happening again. This is happening again. And then, and then it was, I could just hear, I could just hear all these doors closing. I knew exactly where I was going, you know, police car door, police station door, cell door, court door, sweatbox door, prison door, like bang, bang, bang. It just went boom, boom, boom through my head, and I just laid on the floor, and I was in that position again, and my using was very much like that. I would move towards, I was always moving towards a consequence. I was never not moving towards a consequence. I would be moving away from a consequence and bump into another one. You know, like I'd be trying to dodge one and turn around and walk right into another one. And I didn't understand, after I hit the floor and that thing, and after, I don't even know if I really even thought about my children. I was going to say maybe I thought about my, I don't even know if I thought about my children. If I did have a thought about my children, it would be a fleeting thought. So I end up on charge. I'm in court in a couple of days, in a few days. I get remanded in custody. I'm in prison. I go to the meetings. I remember when I was in the meetings before, you get something in the meeting, get out of the cell, you go to the, you get something. These guys give me some sweets, or they give, So I started going to meetings in prison, and and I went to these meetings for about five months. And I'm not someone that using stopped working for. My using never stopped working for me; always worked. I don't know why it worked, but there was something in it that kept me going. Give me a lot of drive, give me a lot of energy, give me a lot of compulsion, give me a lot of obsession. Kept me going. And when I hit that floor that night, there was that, what was coming, there was the removal of my dependence to substances, to my addiction. And what was coming was I was going to meet myself again. And everything I do, is in one way or another about staying as far away from me as I can. And so I start going to the meetings. I'm going to the meetings. In the prison every week, I went to this thing. They bring these guys in to the meetings, and they start talking, and I just see the differences. I just look for the differences, hear the differences, latch onto the differences, and I'm not like you. And then, and every week I'd go back, and the guy'd say to me, and I was still using. And when I go back every week, the fellow would say to me, "Mickey, you 30 days yet?" I'd go, "No, I ain't." He'd go, "How far away are you from 30 days are you?" I'd say, "30 days. Every time. I was there for 5 months. I was always 30 days away from 30 days. I was always 24 hours away from a day claim. I left that. When I left prison on that time, I had to have a detox. So I end up, I defended this illness. I defended it so much. I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. At the time I didn't know what was wrong with me, but I know that the thing is that I am my problem. Just being me is enough. And, I ended up, a probation officer come in. And she said, to do a report on me, you're going to get sentenced. Looks like I'm going to get a bigger sentence than I'm normally going to get because of where I'm nicked. And she does a pre-sentence report on me, and I say to her, I'm fully aware of what I do. I take full responsibility for what I do. I go out, I steal people's money, That's what I do. It's nothing to do with my using. Well, the probation officer loved that. You know, like, this is meant to be supporting me to get sentenced. And then, I end up in front of a judge. You know, my barrister comes in. You know, my barrister goes to stand up. He said to my barrister, he said, sit down. He just went to him, sit down. He said to me, you know what? He said, I've read this report. He said, I've got your previous here. He said, I'm going to remand you in custody again for another 3 weeks. He said, when you come back in 3 weeks, your attitude's still the same. He said, you're gone. He said, you're gone. And he also said to me that prison doesn't work for me. From my first conviction, I got sent to prison. My second conviction, I got sent to prison. My third conviction, I got sent to prison. I think I had one probation in about 20 prison sentences. And spent nearly a decade in prison. And then he said, yes, the prison doesn't work for you, but nonetheless you're going to get it. He said, you know, my job's to protect the public. And then so all of a sudden I'm like that, so I lit up like a Christmas tree. I thought I can get out of this, you know, I can go and use. So I haven't hit the bottom of the stairs on the way back down to the cells, and I'm asking to see the probation. You know, I need to see the probation, I need to go into rehab. They said to me, well, why do you need to go into rehab? I said, well, it just feels it's about that time. and then it goes on, it takes a few months, you know, I'm still, you know, back and forward to court, da, 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 it's all happening. I manipulate, they say to me, all of a sudden they throw a spanner in the work. They say, we want to get someone from the prison to escort you to the treatment centre. I was like, I was absolutely devastated. I was absolutely ruined by that news. So all of a sudden I've got on the phone to my mum. You know, I've really tapped into my mum, you know what, you know, I really want you to be there, you know, you've always been there for me, I need you to be there, you need to tell them that you'll take me to Western Supermare. And then, and I manipulate her. And I've shared this story here a few times, I'll share it again. So it goes through, all of a sudden I'm going to get the order, I'm going to get the order, the bed's ready, I'm ready to go. I'm in the cells, I'm down the cells, I'm ready, I go up to get sentenced, they give me an order, and he said, where's his mum? I said, his mum's not here yet. He went, all right. He said, give me the order. He went, but don't release him until his mum gets here. I'm 38. So I'm downstairs, I'm in an holding cell, I'm in a cell downstairs, and there's a couple of young kids, and we're all just smoking in, and it's full of smoke, and I'm telling them, you know, who I know, what I know, what I've done, who's this, who's that, she's my pal, he's my pal, been a work with him, got graft with her, pulled it up with her, he's no good, she's no good, da, 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 da. Also the door opens, I'm in the middle of a story, they went, your mum's here, you can go there. So what I did, you know, I've got my mum, all of a sudden I said, you know, all of a sudden we come out of the court, she's going to the train station. I said, I can't go to the train station yet. I said, I've got to do something. I said, she went, well, I went, just calm anyway. She's just shuffled along in my manipulation. Just took her with me, took her to an house. The judge, when he sentenced me, he went to me, come back in front of me, you're gone. Absolutely gone. He said, you'll be looking for parole in this sentence. And I just took her within 2 hours of hearing that, or not hearing that. I just took her to an house, left her outside, got some drugs, and went to the rehab. And then around like that. I got there late, you know. And then so then they give me a detox in there. So I'm in this treatment centre, and all of a sudden they're on me. They're all on me. It's like, I can't believe it. You've got a stinking attitude, Mick. I thought, you know, that was all right to me outside of the group. They was all my pals. So they're going, quick, they went, you've got a terrible attitude. You know, I was really wounded. I couldn't believe these double agents. Just could not believe it. All of a sudden, they're beyond me like that. All of a sudden, I went, you know what, one day I went, you know what, all right, I'm powerless. They went excellent. Yeah, excellent. He's powerless. All of a sudden, I was powerless to everything, absolutely everything. Everything. You asked me to put the kettle on, I go, I can't do that. I'm powerless. I can't, you know. One day I was going in, the guy, you had to shave there. And I was walking in one day, and I hadn't shaved. The fella said to me, "You haven't shaved." He's a councillor for years. He said to me, "You haven't shaved." I said, "Because I'm powerless." he just looked at me, and I think back now, he must have thought, this guy's not well, you know what I mean? He just looked, shook his head, he just looked in disbelief. Just... Completely not well. Just really, really not well. So you know, I'm still on the order. So the thing is that, you know, for the first, did I really want to stop using? Absolutely not. I nearly said probably not or maybe not, but absolutely not. Never did I want to stop using. Never did I want to be any closer to me than I had to be. And you know, so I completed the treatment. Come back to London, 6 months, 5.5 months clean, come back to London. The further I got away from my using, the more difficult it became for me. The more harder it became for me, the more unbearable I become about myself. So much shame, so much humiliation, so much fear, so much anxiety, so much low self-esteem, so much, you know, just so much damage. So much not being able to accept myself, not thinking you'll be able to accept me, just no middle ground in absolutely anything. And, you know, and I would come to meetings, you know, I'd come to a meeting a day and I'd go home. One meeting a day, I'd manage to come out of the house, one meeting a day, go to the meeting, people didn't approach me, people didn't give me their number, you know, I was non-responsive to treatment, really. I was non-responsive around this stuff. Very closed down, do not approach, leave me alone, one meeting a day and left, one meeting a day and left, one meeting a day and left. I was still telling everyone I was powerless, though. And, you know, I was banging out this language, going to meetings, banging out this language. My name's Mickey, I'm an addict, I'm powerless. And, you know, and I heard someone else say, you know, my name's so-and-so, I'm a, you know, I spoke to someone be like me, my name's Mickey, I mean, I've got a sponsor, I've got a pair of trainers. Everyone else is saying they speak to their sponsor, I'll get a sponsor. So my name's Mickey, I'm an addict, I'm powerless, and I speak to my sponsor about it. And then I heard someone else say they work this program to the best of their ability. So that was the next. I was adopting a language. I didn't have any concept of anything here. What did work for me was that other people were saying there was addicts. Other people was coming in and saying, you know what, this is how it is. This is what I was. This is what I am. This is where, you know, where I come from. This is where I'm going. And that worked for me. And very quickly, I'll be in here, I'll go, my name's Mickey, I'm an addict, I'm powerless, I spoke to my sponsor about it, and I worked this program to the best of my ability. And, you know, I'd never picked a pen up or done anything. I used to meet my pal, really, he weren't my sponsor, I called him my sponsor. I asked him to sponsor me, but I treated him like a friend, and he suffered me, really. You know, he was just trying to be nice, trying to be a nice guy, trying to support me. But, you know, and I didn't know how to behave any differently. I didn't know how to do that. And, you know, I was doing this for a little while. I was doing this for about 18 months. And as I said, you know, it became more difficult for me. It became more really difficult for me around who I was and accepting who I was. And you know, I couldn't bear myself. And, you know, and I had so much shame and so much, you know, that I started to do service. And, you know, from as soon as I come back to London, I started to do service. And I got a literature commitment in a meeting. And I was obsessed about announcing the literary commitment all the way through the meeting. And I became so scared and so anxious that it got near the end. They turned the lights and I was like, oh my God, it was a candlelit meeting. I was like, oh my God. You know, so I said to the fellow, listen, mate, I'm a literature person in this meeting. I've just got to pop outside. Yeah? So it could have been a newcomer or anything. I just left this guy to announce the literature for me. Just couldn't do it. You know, I'd start to talk. I'd start to talk and it'd go whoosh, the shame would just go whoosh. And it sort of happened simultaneously. So the shame would go like that and my head would go like that. And I wouldn't be able to end the sentence. I could not string a sentence together. Yeah, I was very active in my using, very, very active. And you know, and the difficulties then, you know, and then some indication why maybe I use. Yeah, so, you know, and then I started, you know, just, you know, how sensitive, you know. So I started to do a bit of service. I started to do a tea commitment. I'd done a tea commitment, absolutely unbearable when someone didn't say thank you for a cup of tea. So, so sensitive. Absolutely fragile. Like a china cup, like a broken china cup. Fragmented into the thousands of pieces. Smashed completely to bits. Nowhere to go. So I'm stuck in this fellowship, but, you know, I'm still moving forward. There's people now, you know, I've got people come alongside me now who are moving forward with me. I've moved on, I've got a sponsor. I've heard someone talk about doing the work. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I was like a lunatic with this stuff. You know, very quickly I adopted this stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, I'd be arguing with everyone, you know, twofold illness, threefold illness, obsession in my life, absolutely gone off me nut, completely. You know, like I've got a PhD in the 12 steps or something. Absolute lunatic. You know, you'd open your mouth long enough, I'd try and push the book in it. I was very, very dangerous in this fellowship. Probably done more harm than good. But a little bit of good maybe somewhere. Yeah? I was a loose cannon with this stuff. And I started to do the work. I started to develop a relationship with another person. I was speaking earlier, thanks for your chair when you were speaking earlier, triggered a few things for me. And you know, like that thing of social using. I don't know how to be social. I thought when you said it, I haven't got a clue how to be social. Outside of this. You know, I'm not really good in social relationships. I'm not good in relationships. I'm not good with the relationship with myself. Again, I can move forward into being stuck here. And so I was going to meetings, I was doing service, you know, this stuff was working. You know, as you know, people, you know, I developed a relationship with another person. You know, I started to reach out to other people. You know, I tried, I was trying. And you know, and another thing I did, you know, I had so much low self-esteem that I'd take a meeting and you'd all be talking. I thought, I'd just let you carry on talking. It's like I meant to start at 7:30. I thought, you can just carry on talking. I'd leave everyone talking till 7:55 or till people become a bit unsettled with me. But why he started taking the meeting? You know, I just, it was really difficult for me when I got clean. I started to do the work. I started to do some work, and I don't sit up here and say, you know what, you know, I've never made mistakes in recovery. I've made more mistakes in the last couple of years than I made in the first 7.5. You know, I haven't used. I haven't made the mistake of using. That's one thing, you know, that I haven't done, and you know, I remember when I'd done a step three, and you know, just that, my will and my life, my thinking and my action was completely nuts. I used to walk about praying. This thing, you know, I'd say this thing in my head, which is me. You know, I'd try and separate it with some language, but you know, I would, absolutely insane. Racing, my mind was racing. I had been extremely damaged by my using and the sort of belief system that I put in place. And, you know, and I'd done, I got to a step four, you know, I couldn't wait to start a step four. I was so resentful with a girl in the fellowship that I thought, when I get my step four, you're going to go on the top of that. So it's really sitting in some self-righteous stuff, yeah? So I thought, you know what, yeah, you know, and I'd have the step four there and I'd be all nice with the sheets and, you know, putting them all, like, sitting in this self-righteous anger. You know what, you're going to go top. You know, really, my defects are very powerful, and you know what, they're very comforting and supporting sometimes. They're very dangerous though. Very, very. I love defects sometimes, especially when I'm full of anxiety and fear. Nothing better than a bit of self-righteousness to help me along in me stuckness. You know, and so you know, and this, you know, I'm 2 years clean by now, And I've got, so all of a sudden I sit there and I look at the step four a bit longer and I thought, you know what, she's got to go tough. And then I thought, nah, she can't go tough. I resent her so much, she's got to go on the bottom. And then, and I sit just playing with the sheets again. This is great. I've never felt so powerful. I've never felt so good. Absolutely love it. Love it. I'll say it again, I do love a defect sometimes. Yeah. But they are very dangerous. And then you know what? I sat there for a little bit longer, and I thought, you know what? I resent you so much. You ain't even going on it. And that's the way I think. That probably went on for days. I get caught. I get very easily caught in my self-obsession. In my defects. You know, very easy to get caught. And then, you know what? But I did it. You know, I done that. You know, I wrote some stuff. You know, I wrote some stuff. I shared with someone else. I had some fear. I didn't want to write some of this stuff. You know, my sponsor rang him up one day. I said, I can't write this. You know, he asked me to write down who I'd harmed. I said, I can't. I'm not walking across London with this. I said, this is dangerous. It was like a confession. I said, I ain't walking. He said to me, well, maybe you need to go back to step three and trust that you're going to be all right. And trust me, you know, and I did that, and I did a five, and I shared it, and I shared something I'd never shared with anyone. And I remember when I was in treatment, they used to say that your secrets will keep you sick. I was so shamed by that statement. They used to say it, the shame used to go whoosh, because I didn't know how to share this secret. Didn't know how to do it. I'd never done it. Riddled with shame. And so a bit of an aggressive approach. I see that as now sometimes. But I do understand the concept behind it. And I started to replace my defects with assets. And, you know, I'd also wrote a list of people that I'd armed. You know, the list of people I armed was very long. I wasn't someone who was going to write, I just thought, who didn't I arm? Who didn't I arm? I armed absolutely everyone. So I'll go and make amends. I didn't know how to put my family on the top of on the things. I didn't want to put one in front of the other. One of the people I made amends to, my children got removed when I was using, took into care by social services. Their mother's family got the children, and so I'd stolen off my parents, I'd stolen off emotionally, psychologically. I went to my dad, and I went to my dad, I was 2.5 years clean. I went to my dad and said, Dad, you know what? I said, can I speak to you? I just started to cry. He got really scared. He thought I was going to tell him that I'd used. I said to him, Dad, I just want to acknowledge you that what I'd done in my using was nothing to do with you. And if there's any way that you feel that I can do anything to in the sort of slightest way make that right for you, let me know. You know, let me know. He said to me, you know, I want you to keep doing what you're doing. I also got to admit, I do like when people say they don't want their money back. Yeah, because I still have that financial insecurity of part of something. So all of a sudden, I'm 4.5 years clean. I'm sponsoring someone in another part of the country. I go to speak at a meeting. I'm going to speak at the meeting. I arrange to meet the sponsee to do some step work. I do a step two and a step three with my sponsee. All of a sudden, you know, I turn the phone on. There's a message from my brother. Ring me. I ring him. He tells me he just found my dad dead. My world was turned upside down with a phone call. With an absolute phone call, changed. Halfway through my recovery so far, a bit less, my life just changed. It turned upside down. Smashed me to pieces. Devastated me. The closest person in my world was now gone. And I thought, shall I go back to London? Shall I stay here? Shall I go back to London? Shall I stay here? I thought, what would he want me to do? Well, he told me what he wanted me to do. The day he died, I shared at a meeting the same night. I stayed there, shared at the meeting, come back the next day. So, I continue to come to meetings. I continue to come to meetings. I continue to do service. When I first got here, as I said, you know, I couldn't string a sentence together. And that became more difficult as time went on. The first training that I'd done, I started to do some training. The first training that I'd done, I went to cheat. with the homework. I went to cheat. I got someone's bit of work. I went to hand it in. Been coming here for a little while. All of a sudden, you know, I went to hand it in. I just thought, I can't do this. These people are really nice people. They're really nice. They're really, you know, really, really nice people. And maybe I developed some self-esteem of myself. You know, and I didn't hand that piece of work in. I then done some more training. When I first got clean, my aftercare worker said to me, Mick, he said, how about you go and learn to read and write? I was very offended by that. Very humiliated, embarrassed and shamed by that. I thought, I can't go and learn to read and write. I'm a 38-year-old man. Get me out of it. There were some posters in his office. One was to be an advisor with a citizen's advice. One was to be a substance misuse worker. He said, how about you go and learn to be English? I just looked over his shoulder and went, oh, I want to be an advisor. I went, I want to be, you know, I couldn't stay with that show. I want to be that, I want to be that. He was like, oh, drop me. I said, no, I'll just let a dog with a bone. I won't let him go. I didn't want to talk about it, go and learn to write English. Or go and learn to read and write properly. Anyway, he suffered me. I filled the forms in. I then trained to be at the citizen's advice. I was the worst advisor ever. Kept giving the wrong advice to everyone. Real addicts. Real genuine addicts. Give everyone the wrong advice. And it was their fault. They didn't explain it right. And then, you know, and I trained, to be a substance misuse worker, and I got a diploma in that. And then I've done a certificate in a counselling and a psychotherapy certificate introduction. I've done that. I keep going to meetings. I've got to emphasise, I keep going to meetings, I keep working with new people, I keep helping people, I keep allowing myself to be helped in the stuckness. I've got more stuck than I've ever been stuck in my life, but I do believe that I'm stuck going in the right direction. Yeah? In one way or another. You know, so, you know, I've done that, and then I qualified as a counsellor. Qualified as a counsellor, the level was getting higher now. Still not learning to read and write hasn't been the best support I gave to myself. Then I did a postgraduate diploma in psychotherapy, and I've been at school today. I'm writing my dissertation. I'm doing a master's in psychotherapy. I take a psychotherapy group. Which is a bit hard to believe. I look around to look for the facilitator sometimes. Yeah? You know, it's unbelievable. I see clients as a psychotherapist. Yeah? I still meet my sponsees. I still meet my sponsor. He says that I should tell everyone that I text him more often than I ring him, so it's done now. Just didn't want to start it that way. But I'll end it that way. And you know, I leave my house, you know, I go to a school that's quite prestigious, I think that's the word, and it costs me a lot of money. It costs me a lot of money. I pay for that. I work. I leave my house 9 o'clock in the morning every day. I get home at 10 o'clock every night. Monday night, I go to work, I see clients Monday evening. Tuesday, I go to work. I take the group Tuesday evening. Wednesday, I go to work till 9 o'clock Wednesday evening. Thursday, I go to work, I go to therapy and supervision till 9, 10 o'clock. Friday, I go to work, I come to this meeting every week. Saturday, I go to a meeting, and I go to some 7:30 meetings in the week, in the mornings. You know, I still allow my sponsor to give me that direction. You know, he said to me, you need to get to some of them 7:30 a.m. meetings. I thought, you're having a laugh, really. You know, he said to me at the beginning, he said, you know what, I'd do loads of meetings when I first got paid. He said to me, Mick, you know what, you're going to get less time to do more. It's never been true. I've got my children back in my life. They're adults now. Been in a relationship for a long time. I haven't been nicked for 10 years this month. Wow. 10 years. Was lucky to get 10 minutes, really. Was always due anyway in 10 minutes, you know. And thank you. And you know, I haven't used in a couple of months, 3 months. I haven't used for over 9 years right now. You know, I have better relationships with well, not better relationships, but I get on well with newcomers. It's easier for me to do that sometimes, to maintain relationships. Develop some good relationships, got some secure relationships. It's very different than when I come here. You know, when I come here, you know, my brother's in the fellowship. My brother, he resented me. Absolutely, you know, I stole his money, I said, you know, I used to take liberties. He's in the fellowship, he rang me up one day, he asked me, will I sponsor him? I thought, that's changed, isn't it? I thought about doing it as well. I thought I could put him through it a little bit. Let's have a look at his gear. But I never done that. He's still clean. You know, he's been in and out, and you know, my life is very, very different. Very, very different. But I'm not as far away from using as I am close to it. Yeah, I'd like to be. I'd like to be. The language of this fellowship works for me. It still works for me. My concept of it is very different. My understanding of it is very different. You know how great. You know, I'm writing. It's interesting. I'm doing my dissertation. When I was, you know, all this. You know, don't let me drive you mad with dissertations and stuff like that. Don't get, you know, full of fear. I'm just going to try and give you an example. But I'm doing my dissertation on the sort of the comparisons between therapy and 12-step. I must get some help from your sponsor on this as well. But you know, I said that when I come here, you know, first immediately I was going, you know, we. So in therapy, they think it's a bad thing to become a we. And, I've got the disease of addiction. And they think, well, that's a bad thing to take on. I thought, well, you know what, when I got here, I was like a man coming out of the desert. I was dying from dehydration. Someone offered me some water. I didn't ask whether it was still or it was sparkling. Drunk as much of it as I could. Still drink as much of it as I can. Still works. You know, if you're new here, you know, I wish you well. You really want to speak to me after the end of the meeting, I'm available to do that. You know, I'll give you my number. I'll arrange to get some time with you. You know, I don't want nothing from you. You know, nothing. I'm not trying to sell anything here. I'm not trying to sell absolutely nothing. I'm just sharing my experience. I'll leave it there. Thank you.